Hey, everybody. You want to talk about upping your training game? You want to talk about joining the hundreds of departments that have chosen to bring us in to do some training, customized training, specifically designed to unlock your team's potential?
Yeah, you can get in front of the latest trends, technologies. We are partnering with all types of technology companies. In fact, I have about $250,000 of equipment right across the way.
Yes, you do.
Of new meters that we're playing around with and stuff like that. So our instructors are here. They're all coming over a little bit later with some beer, I think, to play with these meters. But we are only bringing in the first rate instructors. So transform your team's capabilities by coming and hanging out with us.
If you're ready to level up your team, go to thehazmatguys.com/hire us and reserve your spot. I'm telling you right now, things fill up about 3 months in advance. So bring it on.
Yeah. So we have a lot of stuff going on. Let me mention a few things here just to keep the peeps in alignment.
Yes. We should talk about
this. Is probably the most important thing, and if you're going to hit fast forward, do not hit fast forward yet, because the new website is coming out like imminently. Like by the time you hear this, it's probably going to be the next week, which is going to be around the March 25th area. This is a big announcement. If you are a subscriber, technician, or specialist, we are rolling those two things into one, and it is going to be premium.
Right.
Okay. But don't panic. Don't think, oh, I lost all my stuff. It's even more gooder. And we are adding a whole bunch of capabilities. And so you're going to be basically grandfathered in some way, shape, or form. It's too much to stay on the show, but we will get out notification to everybody out there. So do not panic. The new website is amazing. So,
yay.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. So more on that very shortly. It'll be coming out. But with that, we have the after action report.
With Greg Knoll.
Four.
Is it the fourth one?
It's the fourth one. It'll be April 3rd, 1930 hours Eastern Standard Time with Greg Knoll. And I just made an introductory email with Mr. Bill Hand, who will be our number fifth. Number fifth. Did I just say that?
Number fifth, yes. These are great shows, guys. If you haven't jumped on one, I would highly recommend jumping on one. It's a conversation with the founding fathers of Hazmat. They are long format. They are live, which means if you've ever had questions for these guys or you want to put them on the spot by having them talk about a story or anything like that, you can come on Facebook, YouTube. You interact with us. You can throw out questions, hear the answers. It's almost anything goes.
Yeah. So, and also we have some conferences. What is my dog doing? Whew.
Yeah, we got conferences starting next week. We're up in the New England Conference, March 26th to the 28th. OMRA, April 8th to the 10th. Michigan, April 15th to the 17th. Cold Zone, the 8th through the 10th. Oklahoma, May 15th to the 18th. The 19th, we're in South Carolina. And Baltimore, of course, the granddaddy of them all, June 6th through the 9th. And more stuff coming up. We would be remiss not to talk about the upcoming Battery Destroyers Club episode 2. This is where we went out to the West Coast. We destroyed a whole bunch of batteries with a whole bunch of alphabets. Don't forget about our swag. As the new website opens up, we're going to be having a whole ton of new potential swag that is very customizable.
Yeah, you're gonna love them. The kids are gonna love them.
And the kids will love it. They make great Easter gifts.
Oh, it's such a what a treat. All right. So we have, as you can see from below, we have a topic here, and I think this is going to be a two-parter.
Yes, it is. We have got a ton of interest in CNG recently. So we pulled some information from one of our CNG courses, and we want to just kind of talk about it a little bit, because this is something that is growing, much like EV vehicles, right? It's kind of a new thing. We need to figure out how to deal with it. We need to figure out how to work with it. Again, there's very little from, like, you're not going to reach out to NFPA and they'd be like, hey, this is how, as a hazmat technician, you play with this. We continue to have to work on our product container environment and behavioral models to work forward and come to solutions. So, you know, everything's changing. Techniques change, products, the stuff that we use changes. But what doesn't change is the actual chemistry and the chemical physical properties. So let's start off with some background and just understanding that anytime we say natural gas, we're really talking about methane. Yes, there's some other stuff in there. And, you know, we talked about synthetic natural gas, which is an oxymoron in and of itself, which contained a lot of the same properties, only had a little bit of hydrogen and carbon monoxide mixed in there. So let's focus primarily on methane, because when you do go to one of these CNG or LNG vehicles, that is the chemical that you're going to be dealing with. And that is where we start off with our product. So methane, one of the smallest, actually it is the smallest organic hydrocarbon out there, with a molecular formula of CH4 and a molecular weight of about 16 grams per mole, which if you don't know, that's really, really light. It consists of one carbon and four hydrogens, and that is it.
Yeah, that is insanely light. And just for, I know people go, what the hell is a mole? I was just talking to my son about this. I heard in I might be misquoting this a little bit, but it's something very, very close to this, that the size of a mole, I believe, is 6.022 to the minus 10.
The positive 23.
To the 23rd, yeah. Right? Which is an insane, it's an incomprehensible number. So the analogy is, if from the second you were born, you made $1 million every second, and you live to 100 years old, you wouldn't be 1% of the way to a mole.
That just goes to show you how small things are. For those of you that don't really understand what a mole is, it's that number, that Avogadro's number. And if you take the weight in grams of a material, and the grams equal the molecular mass, you then have 6.23 times 10 to the 23, or one mole.
Atoms. So,
atoms. Yeah, that number of atoms.
So one of the things about methane that I think is the majority use, I would say it's vast majority uses, is the combustibility of it, right? Yeah. The fact that we use it in a combustion process to do something. So it is great for that, because it's highly flammable and it can combust in the presence of oxygen, right? The negative parts of that is that it produces copious amounts of carbon dioxide and water vapor, surprisingly enough, which at least your lips are nice and dry.
Yeah,
you know,
they're
wet.
Dry but blue. I mean, wet but blue.
Yeah. So, you know, at room temperature, methane is a colorless and odorless gas. And that throws people off, because they're like, wait a second, I smell natural gas and everything. We'll get around to that. But at room temperature and atmospheric pressure, which are kind of the two key components of telling what phase of matter it is, it's colorless and odorless.
Yeah. So the whole odor thing, right? You turn around and you're like, yes, okay, but I smell it. I smell it. I smell it. Yes, you do. You smell it because of a mercaptan, which is a sulfur-based compound that gets added to this. And when I tell you that you can smell mercaptan in a very, very, very tiny amount, it is extremely tiny. Like, there isn't even a meter that will be able to pick up as low as we can pick up in our sense of smell. Now, why do we say this? Well, this becomes super important, because we sometimes take a look at our meters, but we end up smelling it and we go, well, our meters aren't reading anything, but I can clearly smell it. F this meter, it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And we start to not trust our meters, which is something we've talked about in previous episodes of mental fallacies. So we want to always keep in mind that our meters are correct. It's our nose that is super, super sensitive. And as we arrive on some of these scenes, whether it's an LNG vehicle or a CNG vehicle, these are the things we need to talk about. Although the LNG has its own little twist to it, which we'll get to in a little while.
Right. One of the things that, as a responder, it is a good thing, is the density. Right. Methane gas has a density of approximately 0.55, which is the R gas D, right? Relative gas density, which you'd find in the NIOSH book at 0 degrees Celsius and 1 atmosphere. Now, just for those in America, we use 68 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level, which is, this is a different, this is not STP. This is just their measurement point. So just for, but the point is it goes up. And so as a responder, it goes away.
It goes
away.
For
the most part.
Unless you're where?
Inside.
Inside, in which case we got to worry about stuff going up to the ceiling. But that only becomes a concern in CNG and LNG vehicles if something's crashed through a building. So what are you going to do? All right. Boiling point. The methane's boiling point is about 161 degrees Celsius, which is roughly, what, 258 Fahrenheit, if my fingers are correct.
Yes.
Okay, who cares, right? Like, I'm responding, and this is often something people say. They're like, well, why do I really care about the boiling point? Well, we care about the boiling point because the CNG is compressed natural gas. The LNG is liquefied natural gas. So we can start to get an understanding of how cold this substance is going to be in its liquid form. It has to be below 258 degrees Fahrenheit, which is then classified as a cryogenic liquid at ambient conditions.
I'm looking ahead in our little notepad here, and just one of the things, a good question is, can liquefied natural gas auto-refrigerate?
Sure.
Sure can. And so we use the analogy in classes a lot that propane, when it auto-refrigerates, goes down to like minus 44, and then it stops. It basically, the pressure is zero. And that 44 number is not a static number. It's for propane. And in this case, it would auto-refrigerate at minus 258 degrees Fahrenheit.
Very cold.
Each one that we liquefy artificially, because this is definitively a gas, will auto-refrigerate at its boiling point or thereabouts, because there is some flexibility in that. But
it's, you know, pressure, the whole nine yards. But for the most part, listen, the difference between 15, 20 degrees when you're down already at 258 degrees, like, my finger's not going to be like, ah, I'm not going to fall off because it was 248 degrees. Right.
This is balmy.
Right.
This is amazing.
It's going to shatter like there's no tomorrow.
Another thing with that, and something that I like, the vapor pressure, I like where it's going. But one thing that could work a little against us is the solubility. Right. And this I kind of care about this thing mostly in a decon capacity, but I've also heard people use, I'm going to bubble it or sparge it. Right. And I'm going to bubble it through something. If you are thinking you're going to bubble it or sparge it through a water medium, you're not going to do nothing. You're just making an adorable little bubbler.
Right. Which is a phenomenal, like, backyard, you know. If you want to do a fire pit, it's a great way of doing a fire pit. But that, you know, all right. So, but that solubility you talk about is a double-edged sword, right? There's negative to that, but there's also positive to the fact that I can now use a hose line to disperse vapor or heat that liquid up that has spilt out without having to worry about the water and the methane coming together and causing some larger spill. So solubility is always a double-edged sword. I don't think people really recognize how vital solubility is in our operations from a day-to-day basis. But it is certainly not as important as vapor pressure, which vapor pressure we know for methane is super, super, super high at room temperature, which means that it is pretty much always going to be a gas unless its temperature is dropped down and leaking out of one of its containers. So don't be confused if you arrive on scene in an accident, an LNG tank is broken open, and there is quickly vaporizing LNG all over the place, and you're like, well, wait a second, those two idiots said that it was a gas at room temperature. It's clearly room, you know, at, it's in the room, so why is it not a gas? That whole auto refrigeration, that is when things start to come into play. But the vapor pressure, super, super high, definitely going to be a gas.
And just for reference, any room you're in is room temperature.
Yeah,
that was
true.
A dad joke. That was such a bad one. Okay. Explosive limits. Now, this is something that I would say the vast majority of instructors use this as their gas of choice when they're explaining flammable ranges.
It's my go-to.
Because the numbers are so easy. It's 5 and 15. And so Just really quickly, anything lower than 5, 0 to 5 is basically too lean. 5 to 15 is the flammable range, and 15 and above is going to be above the UEL or too rich. So these, I like narrow. This is, I would say, in the narrow range. I don't like it like acetylene, where it's like 2 to 100.
Forever.
That's enormous. Yeah. And I like it on the higher side. This is on the lower side, but that's okay.
Yeah, but it's kind of in a just right period, right? Like, we look at the explosive limits, and if we take in everything else that we have talked about, methane actually becomes a pretty easy product to deal with because it rises and it goes straight up. You know, you have very little chance of some kind of an ignition with methane because of that, unless you're trapping it, unless it's hitting something as it's going up. We have been on hundreds of low and high pressure gas leaks, not necessarily through vehicles like these, but through the ground. And you can walk up almost over that leak and not even come close to registering 1 or 2% on your CGI. So, you know, when it comes to dealing with these methane leaks, I mean, geez, we even had that one, what was that? That giant tank. It looked like its own little submarine. And we were right over the thing trying to shut the valve off, and we weren't even picking up anything, and this thing was huge and leaking a tremendous amount of product. So that's always something kind of good to remember, right? Like, you know, you try to understand how this substance is going to come out and reach me, how it's going to harm me, and, you know, you kind of get an idea of like how dangerous something is. And for the most part, I don't really see methane as being this huge, huge risk. It's still a risk, don't get me wrong, but it's not a huge risk. Where it does drop in its riskness is the reactivity, right? Where methane is generally pretty inert under normal conditions, but it is still a fuel. So, you know, things like strong oxidizers, as well as the always present flammability risk, exists.
And just to round out the chemical physical properties portion of this specific chemical, we should probably talk about a couple of the hazards. And I think it's implied and understood that the major hazard of this is the fire and explosion hazard, right? Fire, the combustibility, the explosion, and I want to kind of explain that explosion thing is the rapid warming and pressure front of something, right? So it does it so quickly, it has the ability of pushing, and that's the explosion part of this thing. So it's very flammable. It can form explosive mixtures with air anywhere in the flammable range.
Yeah. And go
and
boom.
That's it.
Very easily.
And go boom.
You know, methane is definitely very easy to ignite. Beyond the explosion, when it comes to a gas, especially a gas that undergoes cryogenicity. I like osity. Osity works for me too. All right. You have that asphyxiation hazard where you have so much product and it vaporizes so quickly that it pushes oxygen out of the way. Now, is this something we really need to be concerned about outside? No, probably not. But let's not forget, right? We talk about the density, but we fail to talk about the density in terms of cryogenic. I don't know what is going to happen when the cryogenic temperatures come into play with the vaporization being released at that temperatures. Things that are cold generally are much, much denser. Now, it may be that specific condition, the cold gas goes up, which is great. But you also may have a condition, just the way the atmosphere is, even if you're outside, that you can suppress those vapors and they will stay down low, pushing out the oxygen. So we never want to turn around and go, you're always safe outside. Don't worry about it. And the only worry that you have to have with methane is explosion, because you could have an asphyxiation risk as well.
Like it. And health effects. I actually saw, what do they call it? A post-mortem, where a report from the medical examiner where they put the cause of death as methane or natural gas toxicity. And I was like,
that exists?
How is that? Now, all right. So while methane is not considered toxic,
okay,
I would make a valid argument that the presence of it in the asphyxiant range, the flammability range, would be pretty toxic to a person.
Yeah. I mean, lack of oxygen is toxic, right?
You know, so you know, it starts out with the dizziness, the headaches, the nausea due to the oxygen displacement, and eventually the respiratory depression, the respiratory arrest, the cardiac. You get where I'm going on this. But the thing is like, is it toxic? By definition, it's not toxic, but I think the outcome is still as toxic as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, death is death. Death. Like, death is death. Cryogenic hazard. This is especially true, again, with the LNG vehicles. And I would even venture to say that we would want to be careful in the high pressure, high volume DOT tanks that house the CNG, because you could have so much gas coming out, you would get a frosting effect around the couplings where the pressure change is happening. Just like on the back of your SCBA, only you're going to be much colder because you have a much higher volume of air that's pushing, or not air, but of product that's pushing out of that valve. So be careful when you're dealing with the valves and the metals. You don't want a frostbite on that. And certainly the cryogenic material will definitely freeze you up.
So with all of this being said, what's the prevalence? What's the odds, statistics that you're going to run across natural gas? And I would say it is probably really, really good. I mean, yeah, like incredibly good, not only in a fixed facility like a house or that kind of stuff, which it's incredibly good. We're talking about the CNG and the LNG type vehicles, which are becoming a thing. Global demand for CNG vehicles is projected to grow at an impressive 10.9%. Right. That's a compounded annual growth rate from 23 to 33 over 10 years.
10.9%.
That's a very sharp
significant
increase.
That is significant. I mean, the 2033, by the end of 2033, the market is expected to reach a value of about $312 billion, where the current market is about $110 billion. So you're seeing a tripling of the market value in and of itself. So we are definitely seeing these. I mean, you've got people pushing for, you know, the green, sustainable, low emissions, and the methane vehicles hit a lot of those marks until hydrogen comes around.
Oh, let's not get ahead of ourselves. That's a whole nother episode.
That'll be episode 600.
Yeah. But, you know, okay, they're out there. They're on the roads. I think we can understand how it is in a house and everything like that. But identification now becomes the key, right? And when we see these vehicles equipped with natural gas fuel systems in the United States, and I'm saying specifically United States, if you're not in the United States, you're in Canada or Europe or whatever it is, you're going to have to check it out. For the United States, it's mandated by the Department of Transportation, US DOT, to display a diamond-shaped decal on the rear, indicating that the vehicle is powered by either CNG or LNG.
All right. Now, there's an addition. Yeah, it's a little boop, 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 blue. There is a little addition to this, and that is that the CNG and the LNG may also be placed in the fronts and the sides of the vehicle. That may is huge, right? That means it doesn't have to be there. That is an option. So if you're pulling up on scene and you've seen, you know, four or five vehicles with it on the side, that doesn't mean the fifth vehicle that you respond to is going to have it on the side. The one that Bob said, that is the one that is mandated by, you know, the Code of Federal Regulations to be at. The ones on the front and the side, they're optional. For LNG trucks, the LNG fueled vehicles, they can be identified by a blue and white diamond decal. So instead of having all blue, we've got blue and white. And an LNG blue decal is usually located on the lower right rear of the cab of the vehicle. And if you don't have... So imagine picturing like a tractor trailer. If it doesn't have a mass behind it, it can also be put in the back of the cab as well.
Okay. And also on liquid nitrogen. I was going to say liquid nitrogen. LNG. The decal must be on the side mount of the fuel tank. Right. So on and the actual fuel cells, they would have it. And on a transit bus, like a public transport bus, you would have it on the right rear area of that thing. And I, personally, I think around us, I see it up high on a public transit bus.
The sticker itself.
Yeah, I've seen it up high.
I think by us, they're actually on the fuel tank. So that would meet with the decal mounted on the side of the fuel tank. The fuel tanks are up high, so we can see them up high as well.
That makes sense. So for compressed natural gas, now we're talking about not liquefied, just compressed. The CNG fuel vehicles are identified by, again, a blue and white decal on the right rear of the vehicle, and a CNG may also be affixed to the front left of the vehicle. That's a may, not a need.
So clearly the LNG CNG is very similar. We're going to be seeing much more LNG in trucking, right? That is what it is. All right, so for the CNGs, let's talk a little bit about the types of cylinders that we're going to come across, because when we talk about, and we're not talking about it in this podcast, I don't think we're talking about it in the next podcast, but we definitely will be talking about, when we do our class, we talk about fire tactics. So in the next episode, we are going to start to get into cylinders.